Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the Calcio Land podcast of the week. So today we are going to be joined in the interview segment of the podcast by our friend Gabriele Romano, works with me on Di Marzio's site, also helps me with the ESPN transfer rumor raiders. We're going to go around the transfer window in Serie A and talk about some signings that have already happened and some that could happen in the coming weeks. We do have some Twitter questions from our listeners. We did get a ton. I'm going to save some of them, though, for Monday. So if we didn't get to your question, we appreciate it, but don't worry, we will get to it on Monday. But before we get into all that, I am joined by our great friend, the producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. So Alex, I wanted to start with this. This was a deal we talked a little bit about that could happen on the last episode. There's been more and more reports on it. So before we get to the latest, I want to ask you, you've watched Allan quite a bit, both last season when he played for Sarri and how he's continued to play really, really well without him. And he's been heavily linked to PSG. So, you know, always my thing when I look at teams, I look at the deal and ask myself, you know, how much is he really going to improve the squad? Could he play for the teams that PSG is competing with? So when you look at Allan and PSG's squad, how do you think he would fit in there? Do you think he's the type of addition that absolutely elevates them to clear Champions League contenders?
Honestly, David, I do. I've been saying for quite a while that PSG are just missing something. They have such quality players, obviously, in Neymar and Mbappe and Cavani, Thiago Silva, Verratti, but I always am ending up missing something from PSG. Now, on one hand, it's leadership, and I'm not saying Alan is going to help extraordinarily with leadership, but I really do think that if it's not leadership, what they're missing is a little bit of grit, a little bit of fire, a little bit of tenacity, somebody who wants to do the work but not necessarily get the praise. Now, Thiago Silva is one of those players. He doesn't really demand a lot of praise, but they need more of those type of players. And that's not a hit to Neymar and Mbappe, but those are players, those are billboard players. Those are players that are going to go out and get theirs, but when push comes to shove, they might not be getting really down and dirty in the important parts of the game. And once again, that's not a hit to them, but there needs to be some balance in the team. Now, Marco Verratti is kind of a polarizing player. I'm not as big on the player as some other fans are. However, Verratti is still a quality midfielder, but he's proved to not be enough for PSG. Now, with Rabiot most likely leaving for Barcelona, they really do need even more additions to their midfield. But I think getting Alan would almost be getting like two players in one. He is such a complete midfielder at this point, like we've talked about countless times on the podcast, David. He does a little bit of everything. I've even talked about how some really spoiled Chelsea fans look at N'Golo Kante, who obviously is world-class, but look at N'Golo Kante and almost wish he was Alan, because Alan does have a little bit more to his attacking game. But he just does it all. He's 28. He's in the prime of his career. That is exactly what PSG are looking for, someone to do the dirty work, but to also link the midfield to the attack and not really look for the extra praise. Honestly, if I hadn't heard of this rumor and you would have asked me 5-6 months ago, name five players that PSG should acquire, I hope I would have thought of him, but I should have definitely thought of him if I was asked, and Alan would have been one of those, David. I think it absolutely catapults them to the final contenders in the Champions League. Now, maybe it doesn't actually materialize this season. Maybe he and the team need a little bit longer to mesh. But I think overall, it really makes PSG a much more dangerous team.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I don't follow PSG as much as you do, but absolutely strikes me as the type of guy that would make a difference. And, you know, this is what I was talking with Ramsey and Juve. Like, yeah, that's a fine deal. It's good. But is it really something that moves the needle? And in my opinion, Allan is definitely in the short list for best midfielders in all of Serie A, and his style of play from what I've seen of PSG seems like it would fit quite well. So here's what's the latest on what's going on with Allan and PSG. And obviously we've had reports on this on Di Marzio's site. Alvino, who's one of the most plugged in people for Napoli and is based in Napoli, is very close to the club, has been writing a lot about it. So it seems that, you know, Napoli would be willing to part ways for Alan if a monster offer arrives. And a monster offer for Alan would be 80 million. So really, really substantial. So it seems that Napoli would say, hey, you know, we'd love to keep him, but that's a price where we really can't say no. We can then replace him for a player for 40, 50 million, bring in someone like Barella, and then, you know, do pretty well. In a lot of ways, it would be similar to what they did with Jorginho and Fabian Ruiz. Fabian Ruiz is younger. They spent less than what they got for Jorginho. So I could see a move like that happening. But I have to say, to me, I could also see how this rumor is out there mainly to maybe get him a higher contract, a higher wages. This strikes me as something that could be in the mix here. It doesn't sound like PSG have made a formal offer. And if they did, it wouldn't be anywhere close to this. So I have a feeling maybe Adlan's agent's also using this news as a way to get an extension. And he deserves to be one of the highest paid players at his position in Serie A for sure. Now, the other thing, there are the two other factors to consider in this. A, PSG's financial fair play situation. Spending so much on a player like that obviously would have repercussions for them. The other thing, though, is that, and this is something that Gazzetta dello Sport pointed out today, very good point, that Napoli and PSG have actually done quite a few big deals in recent years. I think most people remember Cavani, but there was also Lavezzi who went to PSG for big money. So there's obviously a strong relationship between the two clubs. Both those deals worked out well for PSG. I think Napoli players, you know, transfer well to other teams. So let's see what happens. At this point, though, I'd be pretty surprised if it happens in season. But it's more than possible that the seeds are being planted for a move in the summer where this happens. So now let's get to the fantastic questions from our listeners and our followers on Twitter. So as I mentioned today, we have the main part of the show is our interview with Gabriele Romano. So we didn't use too many. Those that we're not going to answer today, we're going to go over on Monday. And as always, you can send us a question using the CalcioLand hashtag. And which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, David. Well, we had 14 Twitter questions on Wednesday, and almost all of them were about transfers. So what are the updates on the transfers that we discussed on Wednesday's podcast?
Yeah, so first of all, a big thank you to our listeners. Our episodes on Wednesday was one of our most listened to podcasts in quite some time. Also really appreciated the great feedback on the interview with Lorenzo Vicini on Palermo. That was definitely a really fun one, something a little bit different. And speaking of that, next week, we are going to celebrate the 20th anniversary of Sopranos. We're going to have some content on that. Thousand Names is itching to come back on the podcast, not just with his game predictions, but to share some of his thoughts on Sopranos. And I'm also going to have another guest on Monday where we're going to kick off the Sopranos festivities that way. But now back to the questions on Wednesday. So as you mentioned, Alex, we got a lot of questions on transfer. So I want to give you a couple of updates on what's changed. So the two strikers, the two biggest names, I'd say right now, Icardi and Higuain. To me, what's interesting is, you know, I always like to say I really don't put much stock, if any, on public quotes on transfers. But the Icardi and the Higuain statements, and there's been a lot of talk on both, to me are pretty interesting and for different reasons. To me, all the talk on Icardi, the statements from Wandanara and also Icardi with his tweets, to me, those are just noise. Those are just a negotiation. Chloe, I would be absolutely floored if Icardi left Inter, not just in January, but even in the summer. Next week, there's going to be a meeting between Marotta, Ausilio, and Wandanara. I have a feeling they're going to agree to a new contract. My guess, Icardi's not even one of the top 10 players, highest paid players in Serie A, is going to be paid like one. I could see his salary being in line with Dybala. So to me, all the statements that you read there are just noise. I really don't put any stock in any of that. Now, the ones on Higuain are pretty interesting because usually, the vast majority of times, statements on players from when a club is talking and either the sporting director or the coach or the player themselves, when they're talking, it's all about maintaining the status quo, like denying the transfer maneuvers. We saw that a lot with Bonucci and Gattuso saying up until a few days before the deal happened that Bonucci never told him he wanted to leave and he expected him to stay. But Higuain's been quite different. We had Leonardo, their sporting director, kind of shockingly throwing him under the bus, saying that he had to take more responsibility, play better, and show that he really wanted to be committed to Milan. And today Gattuso mentioned that Higuain's brother, who's also his agent, has been talking to Leonardo, and he said, look, as long as he's here, I hope he does well. So that was pretty interesting. Now, I don't think a deal with Chelsea is anywhere near as imminent as some in the press have made it out to be. For one, Higuain was selected for tomorrow's Coppa Italia match, but it's just such a complicated deal, and we talked about it on Wednesday. So very briefly, Milan invested $18 million on just to have him on loan for a season. I don't see them letting him leave without getting some sort of compensation, or more importantly, having a replacement, because they need a starting caliber striker to try to make the Champions League. We know of Juve's need to find him a destination post this season. So I'm not saying it won't happen, but I definitely think it's going to need more time. But I do find the statements on that pretty interesting. Another quick update. I talked a bit about Carrasco, who has been linked to Arsenal. Now also Man United look in the mix. Milan are as well. But it would be hard for them to meet his wage request and also acquire him on anything but a loan. So those were the main updates on what we talked about last time. Barella, it's kind of connected to what we were talking about, Allan at the top. I still would be surprised if he leaves in January, but you never know. But as far as I know, neither Barella or Higuain are imminent as far as deals for any other club.
Yeah, regarding Gonzalo Higuain, listen, I like Higuain because he can score goals and Maurizio Sarri wants him. However, I'm not going to jump through hoops for Gonzalo Higuain. At this point, it's getting ridiculous. I just think Chelsea need a striker. But hey, I digress. On to the next Twitter question, David. Are Premier League clubs responsible for inflated prices on the transfer market?
Interesting question. Now, I'm gonna set a distinction. I think the prices for players that are transferred between two Premier League clubs, those are definitely inflated. I think those are, you know, clubs that know they both have very deep pockets. So definitely those prices are inflated. As far as Premier League clubs, you know, buying players from other leagues, look, they can afford more, but I think it's really more a distinction of the super rich clubs, not just the Premier League ones. So I'm going to throw PSG in the mix, Real Madrid, Barcelona, Juve's trying to get in to that stratosphere. They're pretty close. I'm going to put them, kind of those clubs, on their own category. It's interesting that Bayern Munich, a club that has humongous revenues, has purposely tried to stay out of huge bidding wars and tried to, you know, improve their team without spending insane amounts. You have to start wondering, though, if that's starting to catch up to them. This has definitely been a down season for them. But I will say there is also an upside to the Premier League being able to afford to buy players for huge fees. We've seen plenty of them, Serie A clubs, sell a player to the Premier League. Then it doesn't really work out and they come back to Serie A on a loan with option to buy or a pretty bargain deal. So there are some advantages. I'm also old. I remember when I was growing up, Serie A was kind of like what the Premier League is now. And I would say even more so, they dominated more on the market. They just spent more than anyone else. When I was growing up, you know, in the mid to late 80s, early 90s, almost all of the top players in the world were in Serie A. So Serie A inflated the prices then. And I think now, though, Serie A, they're always very shrewd. They have the Italian furbizia, are able in some ways to make the most out of the fact that some other clubs are able to spend so much, then the player doesn't work out, and then the Serie A clubs get them on a bargain rate.
David, next Twitter question. Who would be a better fit for Lindelof at Manchester United between Koulibaly and Skriniar?
Yeah, we know it. It wouldn't be a Calcioland podcast without talking about the center back. So again, you know, I know I've said this ad nauseum. I doubt either of them is going to leave in January. So I haven't watched that much of Man United, but I know Lindelof's been really impressive. Obviously, Koulibaly is a little bit older than Skriniar. He's much better, I would say, one-on-one. Interestingly, though, I think Skriniar could be a really pretty intriguing player for the Premier League. He's amazing with balls in the air, very good passer as well. So I'm going to say Skriniar long-term, also because he's younger, so you're getting someone that can help you more long-term.
Hey, I got to be honest, as a Chelsea fan, I would be pissed if Manchester United got either player. They're absolute studs. All right, David. Do you see Joakim Andersen going to another club in January?
So Joakim Andersen is the standout center back on Sampdoria, one of the revelations in Serie A this season. To me, what's interesting is we've talked a lot about how Koulibaly, Skriniar, and Manolas are very hard to get during the January window. But in a lot of ways, I see Andersen as the type of player that if Napoli or Inter or Roma sell one of those players, I think he would be one of the top choices to replace him. So maybe a Premier League club decides to just cut the middleman out and pursues him now. He's probably more available. I think Sampdoria would love to keep him for the rest of the season. But, you know, if a big offer comes in, I think they're much more likely to budge than the other clubs. And I'm going to throw in the mix also Fiorentina's Milenkovic. I think he would be a little bit more expensive than Andersen, but I think those are two center backs that could be more available in January than the others we've been talking about.
All right, David, let's move away from football. Let's move to music for our last Twitter question. What's a more significant concert, Live Aid or Woodstock?
Yeah, so I apologize. This listener has asked us this question a few times, so I wanted to put it in today. So I think there's a lot of buzz for both these concerts. And these Woodstock happened 50 years ago and Live Aid in the mid-80s. There's a lot of reasons why they're kind of back at the forefront right now. So Woodstock, they're going to do a 50th anniversary concert in upstate New York. Live Aid got a lot of publicity because of the Bohemian Rhapsody movie Queen. That is kind of the signature moment of the film, is the performance there. So for me, the answer is clearly Woodstock out of the two, because to me, Woodstock was really a seminal moment at the end of the 60s, an incredible moment, not just in rock music, but also in culture. The first real big festival, it kind of spawned all the festivals that happened after. We then had Lollapalooza in the 90s that kind of revamped that. And then we had the Woodstock anniversary shows. We had some during the 90s as well. But that to me is probably the most significant concert ever. There was all the top, pretty much almost all the big bands at the time, the Grateful Dead. We had Janis Joplin. Joe Cocker had a very famous set there. And the last one, Jimi Hendrix, who played on Monday morning because there was a lot of rain the night before, is one of the most famous moments in rock history, especially when he played the Star Spangled Banner. Is really an iconic moment. So I'm going to say Woodstock, but that doesn't take away that Live Aid was also very significant, not just because of Queen, but also because that was really a concert that showed the power of rock music, you know, to be used for good causes, to try to bring, you know, attention to causes around the world. So everyone knows about Freddie Mercury, the amazing performance there with Queen. But another moment that I really remember, and, you know, I was very young when that show happened. I'm not old enough to have been around for Woodstock, but for Live Aid, I was around, but I've read a lot about it after. To me, really, that was the moment where U2 became the biggest band in the world. In a lot of ways, they took the mantle from the Police, was Sting's original band. They were the biggest band, and U2 with that performance, the Police, I think, had broken up or were in the process of breaking up. And that's when U2 took over. So I want to give a big thank you to all our listeners for sending in questions. If you have more questions for Monday, please use the CalcioLand hashtag. We have a few more that we didn't get to. I also want to give a shout out to our friends with the CBD product. We've talked a lot about it in recent weeks. This is a product that Alex and I really believe in. You can use this for pain, if you're struggling with sleeping, inflammation. I can't recommend enough the products at our friends at BioCBD Plus. We have a discount code that you can use, CalcioLand15. When we tweet out the episode, we'll also put the link. Alex, what are some of your favorite ways to use this product?
Yeah, well, I've said it a few times. I absolutely love just waking up in the morning. And besides having a little coffee, which I probably should get off of, but I'm being a little bit too much TMI right now, I love just waking up to my BioCBD pen, taking a couple puffs, and just really easing into the day, David. It sounds kind of corny and cliche, but I really, really mean it. And it just deals with so many things. As you said, anxiety, inflammation, pain, nausea, helps with sleep. It really is kind of a miracle worker. So you and I can spiel about it a lot, and we'll continue to talk about how much we like it on each episode. But if the listeners, if you listening are interested in BioCBD's products, as David said, go to BioCBDPlus.com. Use our discount code, all lowercase, CalchoLand15, to get 15% off their products. We think you will really like it.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for listening. So we're going to close it out with our interview with Gabriele Romano, and we look forward to chatting with you next week. Okay. So I have to say today is a real treat for me because I'm recording a podcast with two of my favorite people. I'm an old guy, and I'm very, very lucky to work with two outstanding younger gentlemen than I that really make my life a lot easier. So you guys are very familiar with Alex Goldberg, who's been producing and co-hosting the podcast for a year and a half now. And on the line for the interview part of the segment, we have Gabriele Romano, who those of you who follow Di Marzio's site know him as one of the writers there. But he also, on top of that, helps me a ton with the transfer rumor Raider columns on ESPN that you guys love so much. He helps me a ton with the research, fills in the blanks where, you know, I might not know something, and does really an outstanding job. So if you enjoyed those columns, he's as responsible as I am for the quality of them. So what I wanted to do today with Gabriele is talk about the January transfer window. We've had some deals already happening, and I want to talk about some deals that could still happen. So, Gabriele, always a pleasure to chat with you. Welcome back to CalchoLand.
Hi, Dave. Thank you for having me again on the podcast. It's an honor always.
Awesome. Okay. So, Gab, before we get into the January window, what's happened and what we can expect in the coming weeks, let's go back to the summer. Because on the podcast, one thing that we say is we don't want to be prisoners of the moment, but we've had a half a season in the book. So we have a pretty good sample size. Based on what you've seen in the first half of the season, which deals would you say were the best last summer?
Well, in my opinion, the club that made the best deals in the summer is one that is known for discovering talents around the world, and it's Genoa. They brought in Kwame and Piatek, who in my opinion, have been the best two strikers, the most surprising strikers in this area so far, as they complement each other perfectly. As one is lethal in box, like Piatek, and the other one, Kwame, is strong, good in the air, but also very rapid. So I think it's not at all shocking that the Rosso Blu are already getting big offers for them, as they've been exceptional so far as an attacking duo. The other two deals that I think worked out well for both teams involved are indirectly tied together, and are De Vrij to Inter and Acerbi to Lazio. De Vrij looks like has been playing in partnership with Skriniar for years. He has really impressed me since he joined Inter. Obviously, I knew that he was very good at defending, but he surprised me with his ability of playing the ball from the back. But also his replacement at Lazio, Acerbi, is doing just as well. Has been very solid for the Biancocelesti, and he also scored a couple of goals. So I don't think that now Lazio fans are as upset as they were when they discovered that De Vrij signed for Inter. Honorable mention is for Duván Zapata, as for me was a big difference maker for Atalanta, as he is definitely an upgrade over Petagna. He does the same dirty work. He opens space for the other players, for the other forwards like Ilicic or Papu Gomez. But he's also he also scores way more goals than Petagna. So I think these were the best deals in summer for me.
Very well said. I agree with a lot of what you said. And I think Acerbi is the main reason Lazio has been able to do so well, despite Milinkovic-Savic and Luis Alberto struggling. So well said there. So now let's talk about Milan. Let's start with them. So they already made a very expensive signing in Paqueta. And, you know, Gattuso praised them. We're recording this on Friday. Gattuso praised them a lot. Sounds like he could also play in the Coppa Italia, so maybe he could be an intriguing acquisition. They spent a lot on him. It seems like a potential gamble. But aside from Paqueta, what other moves do you think Milan needs to do? You know, it could be a player, or if you just want to talk about positions, that's fine too.
Well, I think that what Milan needed the most was a box-to-box midfielder, especially after Bonaventura's injury. And Paqueta fills that gap in the squad. I think they may use another midfielder and a striker, especially if Gattuso continues to play with two men up front, as Cutrone and Higuain. I don't think they are enough for Milan, especially if Higuain is the player we've seen in the last few weeks, despite the goal that he scored against Spal. In defense, they will have soon Caldara and Musacchio. They'll be struggling with injuries in that position, but I think with Caldara and Musacchio they will be fine. The bad thing for Milan is they have to work under the limitation of the financial fair play. So if they want to add a midfielder or a striker, they should look for an option that is available with on loan. So I think they could work with Serie A clubs. And for example, in the midfield, they are looking at Sensi from Sassuolo, and I think that could be a good move for them, as is both a good replacement for Biglia as a regista, but also a good central midfielder, box-to-box midfielder.
Excellent. So now let's talk about a deal that is official. Gabbiadini is returning to Serie A. Sampdoria is having a very good season so far. Quagliarella has been fantastic. But how much of an impact do you think Gabbiadini could have on Sampdoria?
Well, I think that Gabbiadini is a good sign for Sampdoria. Maybe not as much in the immediate future, but more in the long term. As it's true that he knows the Sampdoria environment very well, since he had a couple of very good seasons there in the past. But it's also true that he has not played much lately. And we know that Gianpaolo is a bit reluctant to play someone who is not completely familiar with his play style and his football philosophy. So he also has the competition from Caprari and De Frel. And especially if De Frel stays at Sampdoria, it could take a while for Gabbiadini to find space. But I think that in the second part, in the final part of the season, and even more next season, it could be a great addition for Sampdoria.
Excellent. So now let's talk about the other teams that are kind of in the mix for the last Champions League spot. You talked already a little bit about Milan. You mentioned Sampdoria. We also have Lazio and Atalanta in the mix. And you can mention these teams again, but I want to ask you, of all these teams, who do you think has the most urgency to make a deal in January? Which team could benefit the most from making an addition or two in the coming weeks?
Honestly, I think that Milan, despite the financial fair play limitation, need to bring at least a couple of players to bolster their team if they want to keep pace with Lazio and Roma. Lazio is, I think that they have already a very good squad. And Inzaghi has many options, especially up front with Correa, Immobile, Caicedo, and Luis Alberto, who is finally seemed to have recovered from the injuries he's had lately. As for Tandem Sampdoria, they could be the dark horses for the Champions League spot, but I don't think they will be consistent enough to reach it. Atalanta don't have the urgency to sign anyone, in my opinion. They have a pretty large squad as they prepared in the summer for the Europa League. Instead, they would need to sell some players that have not made an impact so far, as, for example, Rigoni, who seems set to return to Zenit, or Pasalic. While Sampdoria, I think they don't have enough in them to reach the Champions League spot, despite having signed Gabbiadini, who, as I said, could be a very good addition in the long term.
Okay, so I didn't put Roma in this mix of teams because I kind of want to ask you them a little bit separately. And, you know, I try not to be a prisoner of the moment, try not to overreact. And I have to say one of my big regrets for the first half of the season is not being more patient with Roma, because we really should have seen this coming. Strootman and Nainggolan, you know, were veterans. They weren't as good as they had been in year past, but obviously were very important players in the locker room as well. For the most part, they replaced them with a lot of young players. It took a little while. We know that in Roma, there's a lot of pressure. But they really started to turn it around towards the end of the first half of the season. So in your opinion, do you think Roma can think, hey, you know, these players are just going to keep getting better? Or do you think they should have a lot of urgency on the transfer market to try to add to it? Because we know how important financially it is for Roma to make it to the Champions League.
Yeah, I agree with you. Honestly, I believe that Roma already has a good squad to reach a Champions League spot. They've been struggling with injuries so far. But I think that as soon as the likes of Perotti, Pastore, Pellegrini, or De Rossi, for example, will return to a good level of fitness, I think the whole squad will improve. In my opinion, they don't need to bring in that many players. Maybe just a couple of backups in the defense, since Di Francesco doesn't seem to like Marcano and Karlsdorp very much. And possibly a center forward, since Schick looks like he's in a similar situation to Morata at Chelsea, where he lacks confidence to be a starter, or at least a good backup to count on when Dzeko is not playing. I think that many of their young players have already showed signs of improvement after a slow start. I'm thinking of Cristante, Kluivert, or even Zaniolo. So I think they definitely have the potential to do better without making big addition to the squad in this January transfer window.
Okay, so now let's talk about a deal that is all but official, and then a player that's on the minds of a lot of players following the January transfer window. So Inter, and it's been reported on multiple sites, including our site, so I'm going to go on the assumption that it's definitely going to happen, have agreed to terms with Godin on a two-year contract with options starting next season on a Bosman signing. So I know this team is near and dear to you. What was your initial reaction when you heard that Godin is coming to Inter?
Well, of course, I was excited to know that such a great defender will join Inter next season. I think that this signing would be another step in the right direction for Inter, because despite the age, he's a world-class defender that has won the league with Atletico Madrid. He's played in the Champions League final. He holds the captain of the Uruguay national team, one of the most important national teams in the world. So I think it would be definitely a charismatic addition to the squad. I don't think that this signing is necessarily linked to a possible departure of Skriniar, but he would actually replace Miranda, who is pushing to leave. So I think that shows Inter's ambition to keep improving and being competitive in every competition they will play next year. As you need many players that are on the same level in order to keep everyone focused, but also to be able to turn the squad over without lowering the overall quality of the starting 11. So all in all, I think that will be a great addition for Inter and for the next season.
Okay. So now, Gab, listeners of the podcast have been asking us a lot about Nicolò Barella. Both Alex and I have shared our thoughts on him. Now, obviously, I think anyone who heard your interview so far gets a sense that you really know Serie A extremely well. So if you had to describe Nicolò Barella to someone who doesn't watch Cagliari often or doesn't watch Cagliari at all, how would you describe Barella to them?
Well, he's one of the most exciting prospects of Italian football right now, as I think everybody knows by now. But he's definitely a complete midfielder. He runs a lot for the whole 90 minutes, and he's both good at getting the ball back, but also at playing the ball with precise passes. He's also a good shooter from distance, and he's quite an aggressive midfielder. Maybe his excessive aggression is one of the few things that he could definitely improve a lot. Sometimes he dives into tackle when he shouldn't, so he ends up getting booked almost every game. But I think that's something that he will improve with age. One thing that also impressive is his personality on the pitch, as he's very, as I said, impressive for a guy of his age. He gives everything for the team, and the fact that he captained Cagliari many games despite being only 21 shows that. To do a comparison with another player, I think he's a bit like Nainggolan, except for the fact that he doesn't seem to have an excessive lifestyle as the Belgian. While quite the opposite, he also seems like in the interviews, he seems like a very level-headed person.
Okay. Very interesting. I had one of our listeners compare him a little bit to Arturo Vidal, and I could see that a little bit. But I agree, Nainggolan, and it's not just because of Cagliari connection. Of course, Nainggolan was there as well. So it wouldn't be a Calcio Land podcast without us talking about the top center backs in Italy. I've said it to me this January, the center backs are the sexy position on the transfer market. Now, I'm fairly positive none of these three players are leaving in the January window, but a lot of people ask us about them. So I'm going to ask you, put them in order on who you think is best between Koulibaly, Manolas, and Skriniar.
Well, this is a tough one. I'd say that Koulibaly is the best defender out of the three. Then I would put Skriniar in second place and Manolas. Koulibaly and Skriniar are quite similar in the sense they are both strong defenders, but also comfortable with playing the ball. So they are like the prototype of the modern defender. But I think Koulibaly for now is still one step ahead of Skriniar. The Senegalese is better at reading the play and defending in open space, since he's both very strong, but also quite rapid. While Skriniar, I think, is better in one-on-one situations. Manolas, instead, is more of a traditional defender. He's on the same level as the other two when it comes to pure defending, marking, tackling. But I think he's not as good when it comes to play the ball from the back.
Okay. So aside from those players, Gab, are there any other Serie A players that have stood out to you this season that you want to tell our listeners about?
Well, the player that has impressed me the most so far is one that we have watched for over a decade now in the Serie A, and it's Fabio Quagliarella. At the start of the season, at the start of every season, nobody thinks that he would reach the double figures for goal, except that he does it all the time. So for a guy that is turning 35 or 36, I think it's really impressive. But I've been impressed with many youngsters also in Serie A that they've been playing their first season in Serie A, like for example Bastoni, the defender on loan to Parma from Inter, has been very good when he's had the opportunity to play for the Gialloblu. Of course, Zaniolo also was a pleasant surprise for the Roma supporters, but also for people who love Italian football and see that he could bring good potential to the Italian national team in the future. And last one is one that is in the past few days has also been rumored with the move to big clubs, and is Empoli's Traoré. He's like he reminds me a bit of Vidal with his qualities. He's a very, very mobile midfielder, good both in defense, but also very technically skilled, and definitely one to watch for the future.
Excellent. Well, Gab, great job. Always a pleasure to chat with you on Calcioland. Thanks for your amazing work with the Di Marzio site, especially the ESPN articles. If you're a fan of Serie A or want to learn more about transfers, Gab is definitely one to follow. So thank you so much for joining us today. Always a pleasure to chat Calcio with you.
Thank you for having me.